This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at WorldSweeper.com, and we're speaking with Mark Kinter, a technical consultant for the Elgin Sweeper Company, and has, I don't know how many years, been involved with sweeping. I guess we'll have to ask that of him. Hi, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ranger, and it's been 40 years that I've been in the business.
Well, that's amazing for a guy that's only 55.
That's true. That's true.
Well, you certainly are one of the most knowledgeable people on the concept of sweeping on this particular planet. I am very intrigued with what we're going to talk about today. I saw this for my first time a number of years ago on a trip to Asia when I took a look at how they swept in Tokyo, and they had this stuff called porous pavement that was new to me. Even then, the technical challenges of sweeping was one of the things they were testing to try to find out how do you keep it clean, especially for things like construction, track out, and those kinds of things. So I'm sure advances have been made probably in the equipment that handles it as well. So with that kind of an introduction, Mark, if you would take it away, tell us about what's happening with the concept of porous pavement, especially, you know, how is it going to be kept clean as it advances across the U.S. and elsewhere?
This is a real timely subject because the market for the porous pavement materials and installations and is growing at a double-digit rate. In the other portions of the world, as you mentioned, in Japan for one and Europe, porous concrete has been installed for a couple decades, I guess. In those instances, it's been installed for sound abatement purposes to keep highway traffic noise to a minimum, and it works very well for that. But they had very little concern about stormwater runoff issues in those instances. So when the surface is plugged, they just said, well, it's getting loud, and that's the end of it. In the U.S., it has been put in very, very popular installations as BMP for stormwater purposes. It works very well. It's been studied, it's been proven, and just plain simply, it works for as a good BMP for stormwater. However, the maintenance of it is an issue because a lot of people are putting the surfaces in and they don't have a parallel path to back up on. They're putting it in lieu of storm drain systems. When the surface is plugged, not if, but when the surface is plugged, then they have issues. They have serious issues because they don't have anything to fall back on and they've got water when they don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are, as a little bit of background, there are three broad categories of the surfaces in the U.S. There's porous concrete, there's porous asphalt, and there's porous, actually it's interlocking concrete paver block. All three of the surfaces share one common element in that they have an engineered surface underneath them that acts like a water reservoir, vault, if you will. And the size of the area beneath, it's basically composed of graduated stone and is a holding tank full of stone, if you will. And the size of the volume is engineered to meet the requirements for the heaviest rainstorms they get in that area. The surface that goes on top of these vaults, be it either concrete, asphalt, or interlocking pavers, is just it acts just as a top coating for vehicle traffic and people to walk on and basically maintain the integrity of the under vault. Obvious problem occurs is that the surface gets plugged and the whole system just fails. It's a massive structural failure, if you will, in that it just doesn't work.
What kind of time frame are we talking about there?
It can vary. I run into one installation in Florida where it's just in beach sand, and it's been there for 20 years and never been cleaned and works quite well. I ran into an installation in Minneapolis that was a new road that had never even been open to traffic, and it was already plugged with landscaping dirt. So it can vary anywhere from, let's say, a week to years. Landscaping activities are probably one of the biggest causes of problems for porous surfaces because all it takes is for a load of clay-type soil to be dumped on a porous surface, and it's plugged. That's it. It's the end of the show.
Do you have to pull it back up from that point, or can you
yes.
water take a pressure it down through? Or
No, you have to pull it back out. One of the fortunate things that we've found in research, and I've been working with quite a few universities and material suppliers and end users across the country. One of the things that we've found is that the majority of the plugging takes place in the top half inch or so of the material, regardless of which one it is. Now, I need to elaborate on the materials, because there's a lot of people refer to them interchangeably, and they're not. The concrete and the asphalt are basically you have to think of them as a sponge, firm sponge, and they're very porous. They're made by altering the process with the cement. The mixture is drier with more stone in it, and it creates just a porous surface, and the water simply runs right through the entire surface. Similar situation for the asphalt. The interlocking pavers, on the other hand, are simply concrete blocks that are spaced apart carefully, and then the gap is filled with a granular material. The water runs right through the granular material. The plugging mechanism, though, is not dissimilar for all three surfaces. You get a plug in the top half inch or less of the surface. And the challenge then is to remove that plug. Now, there's been lots of anecdotal stories about how this can be done. And part of the problem with the stories is that they aren't getting quite into the technical detail that's needed to understand the concept of the plugging, the whole technology of the plugging. These surfaces, when they're new, are able to handle a rain flow rate of upwards of oftentimes 500 inches per hour. I mean, a hurricane, way
so
beyond hurricane level.
That's quite the... Quite the porosity. I had no idea that they would be able to handle that kind of volume. My goodness.
Yeah, this is where a lot of the confusion comes in, is that people just don't realize how good they are. I saw a demonstration at the EPA headquarters in New Jersey a couple months ago where they dumped about a 2,000-gallon load of water from the back of a cement mixer. And they just dumped it in probably 30 seconds, and it wet down about a 10-foot circle, and that's it.
Hmm.
I mean, it's the infiltration rate on the new surfaces is just huge. It's way, way, way greater than most any area practically needs. But the problem is that occurs with this is that most people to date have not understood what's necessary for maintenance, and they let the surface degrade until it gets down to the point that they see that that water is standing on the surface when it rains. Well, at this point, we've degraded from like 500 inches per hour to half an inch per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So the people might try various things. Let's say they might take a broom after it, or they might take a pressure washer after it, or just simply hose it down or something. And they'll come back and say, see, it's working. But what they have done actually is just increased the infiltration rate from something like a half an inch per hour to maybe an inch per hour, or 2 inches per hour even. But they haven't even come close to restoring the full permeability of the surfaces. So what's necessary in this instance is to use a very, very high vacuum sweeper or vacuum truck to pull the plug out of the surfaces. There's two levels of maintenance that are required on the surface. If you allow it to get to the point where it is plugged, like I just mentioned, which is common. This is the most common sort of activity now, because people don't understand that it's actually plugged until it's too late. That's a restoration job that's required. And the only way that you can restore it is to use a super high vacuum sweeper. To date, there's only one high-power vacuum sweeper on the market, and it just happens to be manufactured by Elgin. That's a U.S.-made sweeper.
Mm-hmm.
Vacuum sweepers are very popular in other portions of the world. They outnumber every other kind of sweeper by a huge margin in Europe, but they're very much the least popular sweeper in the U.S. If you put a maintenance program in place with a new surface, it's possible that you can maintain it and never allow the surface to get plugged if you use a high power, like 100 horsepower regenerative air sweeper in a full vacuum mode. And this is something that a lot of people don't understand either. Most regen air sweepers, and there's any number out there, have what's called a vacuum enhancer or vacuum improver or something of that
mm-hmm.
sort on it.
It's an air bleeder is really what it is, to allow more or less air get into the system on a recurring basis.
Exactly. And what it does is that if you open it wide open, it reduces the amount that's recirculated, but by doing that, it increases the vacuum level across the entire sweeper head. So if you operate the sweeper in this mode, you can generate probably upwards of, well, let's say, 40, 50 inches of vacuum, maybe, with a 100 horsepower type of a regen unit. And if you do it properly, you can then do a vacuuming, a wide-scale vacuuming of the surface. And you won't actually allow the surface to get plugged. Now, people that are real familiar with the machines, the bells and alarms are going to go off real quick, because if you operate a sweeper in that fashion, what you're going to do is blow huge amounts of dust out in the air if you don't use water. And one of the things we've determined in our research is that you get by far the best cleaning of the surfaces if you do it totally dry, because what happens is that the plug that's in the pores actually shrinks away from the sides, the walls of the surface, when it's totally dry. And it allows you to basically pull the plug right out of the surface.
Well, what kind of width are we talking about here in terms of each individual hole?
Oh, these are pores. These are the size of a pinhead.
Yeah, okay.
And if you wet the surface down, the material that's plugging it actually swells and sticks to the side of the pores, and it's nearly impossible to remove it with a vacuum, with a regen air type of a sweeper, even in a full vacuum mode. So the key is to hit the surfaces totally dry, and this will cause a problem if you use a regen sweeper with the vacuum enhancer wide open, because what it will do is it will blow a huge cloud of dust off the side of the machine. Well, a trick that's been used by many, many dealers over the years and hasn't been fully understood or discussed is what you do is put 100 or 200 gallons of water inside the hopper prior to doing this. Not in the water tank. You just wet down the hopper. And that's totally sufficient to keep from blowing dust out the top of the sweepers. Works very well. You're able to do a dry sweep job. Dry vacuum job, if you will, and not screw up the air quality in the surrounding area. Works
mm-hmm.
quite well.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about why vacuum sweepers are a typical type of sweeper in Europe, because I've, of course, traveled in Europe and covered sweeping, and I'm familiar with that, too. And would you say it's because it's everything's smaller in Europe, for one, road widths and so forth, and that there's a general recognition that the material is closer to the curb line, which is what a vacuum sweeper does the best, is, of course, right over top of where the fan is going to be sucking the air up, the vacuum head. Is that the reason, you think, or?
Well, that's one of the reasons, but probably a bigger reason. Well, two reasons. One is the narrowness. There's a lot of narrower streets over there that you have to deal with. Cobblestone has been around since Roman times, and a lot of the city areas are made with this. And over the years, the roads have become rutted. They're certainly not smooth, not flat. And those surfaces just don't lend themselves to being cleaned with either a broom sweeper or a regen air sweeper. Both those type of machines need a relatively flat surface to work on. However, with a vacuum sweeper, you can do a pretty good job. They're usually vacuuming in a small area, and they have a flexible seal to the ground, so the irregularities really don't affect them that much. They can work quite well.
Right, you're not trying to seal near the same width and surface area
right.
that you would be with a regen sweeping head. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and it's because a lot of times people will mention that they saw this sort or that sort of sweeper in Europe and see something done in Europe, and they say, well, if it can be done in Europe, it can be done here. Well, no, not quite, because it isn't even close to being the same kind of sweepers. It's
mm-hmm.
just not at all. Probably 95%, I'm guessing, of the sweepers in use in Europe are vacuum, pure vacuum, and in the U.S. it's probably 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the two markets really don't share much similarity.
That's why I think that historically there's been so much difference or difficulty rather in having U.S. machines migrate over around the world, and that's getting solved now. But they were trying to sell the same machines to Europe that they were being made standard production in the U.S. And vice versa, and it just hasn't worked. Well, let's go back to our central topic here. Talk to me about what you think that the given the technology that's available with vacuum sweeper, Elgin's machine, what is it that can be done to the pavement? Does that change the cost effective realities of allowing that to advance?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Earlier I said that all of these pavements will plug, and that's a fact. And really seriously, the question is always comes up then, like you said, how long? And literally, it can be minutes. And the biggest source of a problem for these pavements is landscaping activities. With some of the work that I've been doing with some of the suppliers and the installation contractors, we're finding that one of the biggest aids to preserving the surfaces is just to post signs explaining what the surfaces are. Because they look different. They look strange. They look different, but people don't know any different, so it's not uncommon just to dump a load of mulch or dirt or whatever on them and go about their work. That's just the way things are. So as soon as the people are informed, then you can go a long ways toward preventing that from happening. Anyway, with the vacuum sweepers, we've done a lot of testing in all four corners of the country, and found that with a vacuum sweeper that's able to create upwards of 80 or 90 inches of vacuum, which is a real lot. That you can satisfactorily restore the surfaces back to the super high permeability levels up in the 400 or 500 inches per hour range.
Well, that's great. So you're able to take roadways that are plugged and kind of retro clean them, one might say.
Yeah, absolutely. Just do a full restoration job on them. There are some areas where it's not possible. And there are geographical areas of the country where these type of surfaces just are not recommended because of the surrounding dirts. In the Sierras, up and down the Sierras range in the western half of the United States, there's a lot of clay-based soil. Goes by name caliche or gumbo, or it's clay. It's just a super fine clay, and no matter where you go, you're going to find that. And if you get this clay material onto these surfaces, and it gets wet and then soaked in, it's nearly impossible to get it out, with the exception of the interlocking pavers. With the interlocking pavers, what you do is you end up removing the top half inch of the granular fill, and then you just have to refill it, which is a very easy and usually inexpensive job, and you're back to perfect brand new permeability numbers again. So I've been working with a lot of places, and we've had a lot of good learning, training learning instances this last couple years here that are starting to bring it all together.
Well, it makes sense that this would be an environmentally fast-moving product, given the climate for change that is happening on the roadways, and with stimulus money pushing more roadway construction here in the next few years, it seems clear that there would be more and more of it where they'd look toward porous pavement. It has a lot of advantages if you can keep it cleaned out.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell me, Mark, how long will a porous roadway surface be expected to last compared to a traditional surface?
Well, one that's made out of interlocking pavers, I hate to use the term forever, but, I mean, we've got roads that were, if you go to Europe, you can see roads that were made in Roman times out of blocks that are still there. Concrete and the asphalt, it seems like it got quite a wide range on it, and in Europe, if you ask the question there, they're going to say, well, 7 or 8 years. And the reason is, at the end of 7 or 8 years, it's plugged. Years ago, when it first became popular in Europe, there were some machines that were made specifically to clean these surfaces, restore them. The big problem was, even at that time, this is probably 10, 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, these things cost over $300,000 upwards. And nowadays, they would go for upwards of $1 million. And obviously, there aren't too many people lined up to buy that kind of equipment. In the U.S., though, the market is quite a bit different than it was in Europe. It has been predominantly because it's being put in low-speed areas for stormwater purposes. By low-speed, I'm talking parking lots, residential roads. Generally speaking, areas lower speed than 40, 45 miles an hour. So the traffic patterns and that you run into are quite a bit different than you would have on a high-speed freeway. The amount of heavy truck traffic you have is also generally lighter. Now, the surfaces, though, if they're put in correctly, and you have to think of them as an engineered surface rather than just a surface laid over the top of some crushed gravel or something, but it's a totally an engineered surface. And if they're put in correctly, they can tolerate some weight. Interlocking paver sites that I've seen have been used in shipping docks. Oakland uses it in the port of Oakland, where its enormous loads are placed on it. One of the reasons that the interlocking pavers work so well there is that if they are damaged, you can go in and remove an individual paver and replace it. It's obviously much harder to do that with a large-scale porous concrete or porous asphalt job.
In any event, though, it's a lot more expensive per foot to build a porous surface than not, because you have all the underlayment and the catchment area.
Yes, by the time you take into account the under areas, yes, it does become more expensive. But there have been a lot of studies done on the effectiveness of it, or the cost effectiveness of it, compared to putting in a whole new infrastructure system of a storm drain system. So that's why, and it's appealing to a lot of people, if they do it properly and they maintain it properly, they can avoid the whole storm drain scenario and all the expense of putting it in and the problems that come with maintaining it. So from that standpoint, it's becoming quite popular. And the expense in the grand scheme of things becomes quite competitive.
Has Elgin developed a sweeping protocol for porous pavement?
Not exactly. There is a list of guidelines, and there's actually a white paper out on the street that discusses what we've been discussing today. It's actually available on an environmental website that's been created a few months back, www.pollutioninfoportal.com. Just everything as it sounds. There's an area on there devoted to porous pavement that goes into quite a bit of detail on the subject that we've been discussing here.
I think that's one of the, would seem to be one of the keys as we get more and more porous pavement out there, to have contractors and municipalities alike be able to develop a protocol, at least a starting point to deviate from in terms of sweeping frequency. It would appear, just thinking about it, that you would end up with a higher sweeping frequency or more regular than might be otherwise the case on traditional highway surface.
We are working with the EPA on a research facility that they have in Edison, New Jersey, which has the three different types of surfaces on it. And we are starting out, we've had a lot of discussion with the technical people there and other technical representatives from the supplier companies, and we're starting out with a maintenance schedule that is basically in the spring and fall, so twice a year.
Oh, that all? So that's amazing.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you can stay above it, stay on top of it, it will probably work. But this is a research study, and one of the goals is to answer that question, how much is needed.
Mm-hmm.
But all discussions now would indicate that that's a real good starting point.
And you have seen quite a difference between vacuum sweeping and regen sweeping with or other air types of sweeping. Certainly you can use a broom.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just no comparison. When you take a sweeper that's got 80 or 90 inches of vacuum, it can actually do a good job of restoring the surface and pull the dirt right out, any of the plugs that's there. A general regen sweeper is not capable of doing a restoration job. They can do a maintenance job, but they just simply do not have the vacuum level under the head to do a restoration. Partially because if you go to the suction side of a sweeper like that, you might measure a relatively high vacuum. But because the vacuum is contained across the entire sweeper head and created by the seal on the ground, you really won't find that great a vacuum, uniform vacuum across the sweeper head.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, unless you operate it in a vacuum-enhanced mode, you'll only get about half the sweeper that actually has vacuum. The other half will have some degree of pressure.
Because that's the way regen works, is to blow down one side and lift up on the other. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. One of the comments that you just made is very important, and this is going to be an excellent business opportunity for contractors. Because what we've found is most of the people that have these surfaces put in are not capable or not in the market to have their own sweeper. It just doesn't make sense. So it's going to create a very good business situation for contract sweepers that have high vacuum sweepers in their fleet. I've actually been working with the various organizations, the concrete, the asphalt, and the interlocking paver organizations, to try and identify where their sites are, where the applications are, so that we could then hand this off to contractors and complete the loop there. Because it's something in it for everybody. If the customers put this down and don't have a maintenance schedule, they're in trouble. Looks bad for the installation people, which looks bad for the suppliers. And it could be an excellent opportunity for the contract sweepers to generate new business. It's a win-win for everybody in the end if we can get this all going. And we're getting real close to that. On June 4th, there's going to be a workshop at the Navy Postgraduate School in Monterey that is being put on by the University of North Carolina State. And we had one like this last year in the Chicago area at the Morton Arboretum, and it was incredible turnout. It sold out early, and there was people standing outside the auditorium wanting to get in. The level of interest was just over the top. It was primarily contractors and installers, contract sweepers and cleaners that were interested in it because people don't know the answers. They don't know how to clean it. In these workshops, there are several case studies presented from a technical, university level, from a manufacturer's level, from a sweeper's manufacturer's level.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gotten very, very wide acceptance and good review. We're thinking that the one in Monterey is going to be sold out early on. There will be more information on that posted at that environmental website that I mentioned, pollutioninfoportal.com.
Sounds like this is one of those stories we'll be back to with frequency as well.
A lot of interest, but there's a lot of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very active subject that's changing even as we speak.
I sure appreciate your overview of it. Again, we've been speaking with Mark Kinder, who's technical consultant for the Elgin Sweeper Company. Thanks again, Mark.
You're welcome, Ranger. Look forward to talking to you again.